Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
This is our league, and this is your league. Broadcasting from the 55-yard line in Japan to the shores of the Great White North and everywhere around the world on Gridiron America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Welcome to From the 55-Yard Line. As I listen to that opening in real time, yeah, I need to shorten that a little bit. Hi, everybody. It's been a long time since we've been online here. Hopefully, we are streaming on Facebook right now. We were having some technical difficulties earlier. But, hey, it's Fran, Dave, and I, and we are back. Fran, good to see you, my friend. This is your first time ever on camera, at least for this show. So how you doing?
Nice to be on camera, and I like having virtual backgrounds.
How you doing, my friend? How are things in your world, and how are things with over our Sports Central? You've been keeping busy?
Things have been good. I've been writing a lot, been covering all Carolina Courage games, Carolina FC games. It's been writing a weekly UFL column. I might do something on Arena Football next week. The good, the bad, and the ugly going on in that league.
Yeah, there's a lot of ugly. There's a lot of ugly in Arena League football. I guess that's kind of where we should start off, really. Because when I woke up this morning here in Japan, the first news I got looking at Facebook was the Iowa Rampage are going out of business. So, Dave, what say you?
So they posted on, was it really a news release or it was a Facebook post?
Well,
I don't know.
It's on the website because that's
where it's on the website. Okay. Yes, I did see that. That's a that doesn't look too good for that team.
Well, let me ask you this because I am so far removed from everything arena football wise. Because I know I can watch it on YouTube and everything, but you know there's a huge time difference and my mornings here. As the weather gets nicer and everything, I spend less time. I try to get out of the house earlier and earlier. Where is the AFL? Which week are we in? What's it looking like? I mean, you guys are following this stuff close. So where are we at with the AFL?
Only in week one. So it's just, like I said, I mean, if they're trying to make a good first impression, they're not. I mean, this is almost as bad as the Alliance of American Football, all the over-promising and under-delivering. We were supposed to have an awesome NFL Network game. We would have had their Orlando-Albany game. People would have been glued right after the NFL draft, would have gotten a rating, but no NFL Network games.
And was there any reasoning given? Well, the NFL isn't going to say much, but was there really any – what was the scuttlebutt online?
My understanding is the company that the AFL hired was having production issues. That's really, I mean, there's
production issues.
Anybody and everybody who can post something online has an opinion.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
There is a lot of information out there, but the game wasn't on, period. That's the bottom line. So
the games are obviously period. There's supposed to be a game playing on the NFL Network and that got pulled.
Honestly, you know what? I'll jump in there. Good. A Thursday night, I thought it was a poor idea having Thursday night games on NFL Network. The game right now is going on in Albany. There's about 1,000 people there. What was that going to do?
Nothing.
You could have a 77-71 greatest game of indoor slash arena football in the history of that sport. And if you have 1,000 people sitting in a 15,000 seat arena, what are you going to hear tomorrow morning from Mike Florio?
Crickets.
What do you hear from Good Morning Football? They're gonna say something about it, and they're not gonna talk about they're not gonna talk about the game. They're gonna talk about, are you kidding me? There's 1,000 people there. So yeah, there's a lot of backlash from a lot of people with really cool nicknames online, but at the end of the day,
Novelos Mysterio.
These games not appearing on NFL Network is not the worst thing in the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, didn't the AFL, I mean, they're not doing YouTube like the IFL is, right? Or any other
way. They're doing streaming services.
Yeah, they have their own streaming service. You go to their website.
Okay.
The one of the Huddle, one of the companies that's investing. One of the companies that was part of the Arena Football League is doing the broadcasting. So you go to the league website and all the games are available to watch. Well, the games this past weekend.
But you got to look for the web. That's the problem here with, at least just from my opinion here, if you've got to go look for this product, you're already losing. Whereas if it's on YouTube, you know, the LFA, the IFL and other sports leagues are at least throwing their product out there where anybody and their mother can find it, including this little show. It's on the same platform. It
boggles. I don't disagree, but that's what they wanted to do. So, I mean, I think YouTube would have been 10 times better, but there's something had to do with something, obviously, with someone either they're investing, if they're going to invest, they want the traffic. I guess. I mean, it's the only thing I can think of. Fran?
Well, being as cheap as possible. How many teams have press releases? How many teams have infrastructure? How many teams are actually doing something right? How hard is it to get college interns to work in that office and do stuff? I mean, skeleton staffs.
You have that going on in the IFL. Not every team. I mean, you're talking about minor league sports. Not writing a press release is ridiculous. I'm not arguing that point. But what I will say is, look across all minor league sports. Majority of these teams are understaffed.
Doing multiple jobs, I know that. A lot of my 4 or 5 different jobs for each team, but it's a passion project where they, you know, where they make money and they pay bills. But where's the money coming from? Where are the investors? Where are the corporate sponsors? Who has the money in this behind this great arena football setup?
Just like any other minor league team, if it's the team's responsibility to get corporate sponsorships, not the league. The league has league. What league is doing a bang-up job of getting national sponsors? Well, I'm curious, what are the top sponsors for the National Women's Soccer League?
Well, they have four national – they have a good TV deal with a bunch of networks and WNBA with the Caitlin Clark thing.
TV, I understand TV, but we're just talking about corporate sponsors. I mean, it's a tough road. Like I said, I'm not looking to – defend the Arena Football League. I am not. But the same issues they're having, obviously not on the grand scale of this, are happening other places in minor league sports. It's the way a lot of this works. I mean, the National Arena League already had 2 teams drop out.
Yep.
Before the season even started.
But they wanted to be the Premier League and the above it all and the $1,000 a game where players are making more money. They're supposed to be more higher standards, and people are hanging on to the nostalgia. If I was Jim Foster, the league founder, I'd be embarrassed. I mean, he found this league, and someone's just, Arena Football. Let's use this nostalgia and they use the name, but they're not doing anything else with it. It's like when Brian Woods bought the USFL trademarks. He didn't know a damn thing about the league in the 1980s. He just bought it to elevate his career.
It probably made him some money. I'm pretty sure he walked away with a pretty good check from Fox.
Yeah, he's the only person.
He's got more money that than his FXFL disaster and his Spring League disaster for unpaid debts and bills.
And most likely he wasn't responsible for those. I'm not saying it's right. I am not saying it's right, but I'm pretty sure Brian Woods walked away with a pretty good check at the end of the day of all the work he put into whatever you want to call it. That's the whole thing. It's like I just look at how these sports leagues work and who they have and what they have. I mean, I watched the game, some of these games over the weekend. Who has great crowds?
Well, the weather gets nice. People want to be outside.
I'm just saying overall. I mean, all these teams. It's nice. I mean, I agree. I don't disagree with anything you're saying with the opportunity to go outside and enjoy the weather. That's why you need to have people working in these franchises to get people to come to games. You can't have just one ticket person or an intern tweeting or an intern doing press releases.
You need a marketing team to get people excited, to get people to get asses in the seats. Obviously, the visual product online, whether it be your phone, your computer, your TV, or nowadays, that is very, very important. But to get, you know, because all of these leagues, we'll set aside the UFL and we'll set aside obviously the NFL, but the CFL and the indoor leagues, they need people they need asses in the seats for the long term. You know, I mean, other leagues, and as you know, with the UFL, obviously we're going to talk about in a little bit, but the ticket sales are not as critical as they are for these other leagues, because without the fans in the seats, you got to generate a demand, and that's what the marketing, like you said, I mean, you need more than one person doing social media, and that's your marketing person. You need an 11-man team doing marketing work.
And with social media,
whether it's paid or unpaid.
And with social media, you're basically catering to your audience. You're not bringing in new people.
Right. And that's kind of, I love the AFL. Way back when, one of the nice things I always talk about with the AFL is I've been to three AFL games back in the day when I think the popularity of the league had started to wane. But, you know, went to three Chicago Rush games. They had great seats, had a great time, great product. I mean, anybody who's been to an arena football game of any flavor knows it's a great product on the field. It's fun to watch.
It was good. Prior to 2008, it was great. First version, it was great. I was in New Orleans watching the Philadelphia Soul win the Arena Bowl in New Orleans. Then when they went bankrupt, the new version wasn't that good. And now we have this version, which is a cheaper version. So.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Greg. No, go, please.
No, and you can't blame the players, because the players, going back to what Dave said, we've always said is, the players always get shorted in all these minor leagues in terms of pay, amenities, treatment, so on and so forth. It's always the suits that ruin it for everybody. But with the Arena League, what's being said out there? Because again, I'm not following it over here. I mean, I'm following other things here football wise with the X League spring season starting tomorrow. Which I'm hopefully, knock on wood, I'm going to a game tomorrow here. But how are the players being treated in terms with these indoor leagues right now? What's the scuttlebutt?
I mean, well, you're only hearing about the bad situations. You're not hearing about the players who are getting paid. So right. There are, and this is where, and Fran, please, jump in, but this is where I struggle with, because there's a lot of disgruntled people who have enough contacts in social media to get what they want out there. And I personally, I completely understand there are teams and situations that are not good. There's financial implications that are causing these franchises to either terminate, threaten it. But then you start getting information that is shared that I'm not sure the complete credibility of it. Because I was talking to someone earlier today about some of these situations, and is it an axe to grind, or is it if it's a true situation? Because some of the things are coming out by players, supposed agents. Like, I'll give you a good example, the Iowa Rampage Twitter account. Now, this is the team Twitter account. The team, not a player, team.
Right.
Talking about players not getting paid and coaches and then this and that. Like, what – the team? Like, it's really tough. I'll be completely honest how this is all – there's a lot of people who want to share information about arena football, but they're fans who decided to start doing a podcast, start whatever that is. And they take a lot of information directly from owners as 100% accurate and true with zero pushback. And then rumors get, this gets said, this flips around, this goes out. And I like to see a lot of it shake out to see what exactly is happening, because everyone has an opinion in this small fragmented community that's almost like an underground cult. Because there's not a lead or a credible source who is leading the way in bringing you arena football information. Now, I'm just talking about the AFL, all indoor football. And I see arena when you're talking about the IFL, the NAL, the IAF, the Arena Football League. There's another one supposed to start next year. I can't keep track of all these names, but I think that for me, that's the biggest, my toughest thing is really tracking down what's true, what isn't. And obviously in everything that's being said, there's some kind of truth to it, but what, as you would say, Greg, what's the spin on it?
Yeah.
Because all you're hearing from the team is the league didn't do this, the league didn't do this, the league didn't do this, the league didn't do this. But
right
after one game, I'll give you my last example, then I want to turn it to Fran. An agent was talking about players weren't getting W-2s. Well, the team hadn't played a game yet. You haven't got a paycheck, and the W-2 is what you get at the end of the year from the money you received. So I don't know what this gentleman is talking about. None of his players got W-2s. Unless they were paid last year, they wouldn't get a W-2.
Right.
So I'm not sure what and the gentleman just kept hammering home that none of my players got W-2s. I'm like, but that's not – if you're
getting – is he thinking a W – what is it, the paperwork that you sign before you start working with the – is that W-4?
Yeah. Or a 1099 if you're getting – like, it depends on what the paperwork is. But I'm like, you lost me. You lost me, because I'm like, unless those players played or got paid in 2023, they would not have a W-2. And I don't know what the contract is, but if they're getting paid by per game, then they wouldn't begin the paycheck till after they played their first game.
Man.
So this is what I struggle with, because there's so much information flowing out there. And then you'll pick up an article by the Philadelphia Inquirer or the Philadelphia newspaper reported something, and it was literally regurgitated from Mike Florio and from something else that he read somewhere else. So I'm just curious, Frank, I'd love to hear your thoughts, because I know you with our Sports Central, you're seeing a lot more things across the wire per se than I would, or Greg.
Well, the thing is, Philadelphia Soul, if they did not have an arena lease, they should have never been awarded a team all these teams, they should never give them a franchise if they didn't have a place in Philadelphia, because Trent is where sports teams go to die. I've been there for Trent and Freedom professional in the Football League game. That's such a terrible, scary neighborhood. And every league that goes, it dies. There's nothing going on in that Trenton arena right now. But if they weren't playing in Philadelphia, then why give them a team? Vet the ownership groups. The thing was, the AFL went too big, too fast. They should have had the eight best markets, the most committed owners, and then build slowly and steadily. They didn't have to have a bigger league like this where you have to put more fires out. Start small and then get bigger. Get the ownership groups. Get the best markets. You got 8-10 solid markets, and the fans would have been happy about that. Look at the National Arena League. They have like 70 teams. You don't have to go big.
I understand that. Yes, I've heard that. That is true. No one is debating that, but we're here now.
It's only 1 week.
I agree. They should have vetted. Or I guess the other thing is, when you brought in the CIF owners, has had a bigger bond from them, so they could cover costs. So I guess that's my question is, maybe they should have required, maybe what they asked for, they were met upon. They should have asked for more or had more liquidity for these CIF owners who came in, who were running a smaller league, less travel, when they joined. Hey, you need to have XYZ in a promissory note and have ramifications for dropping out after the first week of games.
It's only been 1 week. How about we just circle back to this in a month and see where the AFL is? People are going crazy after 1 week. Let's see how this all plays out. How many teams fold? How many games get canceled? We can't just judge it on 1 week. I'm not writing an article based on 1 week. I'll wait a couple of weeks and see where things settle out.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying that this is going to be roses. It's going to be bumpy. Yeah. But you know what? Here's where I will. My last thoughts on the arena football league itself. They get through it, whatever number of teams. Say 10 teams make it. 10. Those 10 teams make it, and those guys get paid $1,000 a game, and that money gets to them. That's a success. Because that shows to all these other leagues that they are woefully underpaying players. And that's the biggest thing. I guess I can't stress this enough in my conversation. $250 a game. Nothing during the week. $250 a week. You might get a win bonus of $25. Now, Now, teams have been known in the IFL to pay under the table to extra players. Well, why not put that above board?
Well, this is minor league sports. When you're not here to
pay your rent. If you have that, is it $1,000 cash? We're talking about some different ramifications that go beyond your $250 a week paycheck.
And for all these guys that are playing, I mean, this is not, I mean,
it's for the love of the game.
It's for the love of the game. These guys work regular jobs. It's
$250 a week. Yeah, it is for the love of the game.
Where the UFL is for moving up. They can actually take care of themselves with a year's salary in the UFL. In this league, you're not. Indoor leagues, you just play for the love of the game, playing because you love it, playing for, to be in front of your family and friends. You're not doing it to, elevate, because very few of those guys make it. Joe Powell, who played for the Carolina Cobras, National Arena League, signed with the Arlington Renegades this week. He played with them last year. Very few got diamonds in the rough, move up to other leagues, but it's just
everybody, the way indoor football has been sold in the last 25 years, has been Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner has always been that shining example of what, being somebody coming out truly of the deep minor leagues. We're not talking, we're talking Sandlot football. His story continues to this day. Now, as we're talking here, I'm looking at our comments and everything. So we got Max Camera Guy watching us on YouTube, and he made a couple points here. He goes, the AFL wanted to prove its back and went too big too fast. What do you guys think?
I totally agree.
I don't disagree. But my only caveat to don't disagree is I don't know what the 16 teams, what were the parameters for their financial stake to get this?
Right.
I'm not trying to skirt the issue of did they try to go too big too fast? 16 teams from zero, it's a large number. But
yeah.
Was the largest mistake by the Arena Football League made by not requesting a larger letter of credit to financially back this?
Right. Well, I mean, to me, and with the Arena League, and just using the Arena League as an example, this is the current AFL is yet another example of what happens when people who start these leagues don't go back and read the history book about the World Football League. Because to me, this feels like the World Football League from the 70s kind of all over again. The other leagues, not so much. The other indoor leagues have been around a while. But to me, when it goes to talking about financials, I mean, when they started that World Football League, they were giving franchise to anybody who could produce a letter but didn't have the financial backing really behind them. So when the current AFL started up, that was my first thought, going, this feels like the World Football League, not, say, the U.S. Football League of the 1980s in terms of starting, at least the USFL had a plan in the 80s going forward. I would contend like the World Football League didn't have a plan back in the early 70s how they were going to do things. Because even goes to talking about, okay, what's your media plan? Because with NFL Network, oh yeah, we're going to be on NFL Network. Now they're on NFL Network. It just, unlike the Indoor Football League, which has their games on YouTube, the other leagues too, this one just kind of just feels like there was no plan. Nobody made any plans moving forward. The only plan they had going forward was hope. And I know I've said that many, many times before, and I've said that about the UFL, about the XFL, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But to me, that's just how this Arena Football League felt when I first heard about it over on the World of Football podcast with my buddies Randy and Adam, with our buddies Randy and Adam Snow. They were talking about it. Now, I haven't talked to them. I haven't listened to the show, unfortunately, in a while. Apologies, guys. I haven't listened in. I got to catch up on my episodes there. But I'm curious to hear what their take is after week one in terms of moving forward, because Randy and Adam, along with our friend Tim Capper, they're the acknowledged Arena League experts. Whereas you guys are following it closer than I am. I'm on the other side of the world. I got so many other things going on here this spring that I haven't been able to focus even on the UFL. So I'm asking more questions and not providing any really many insights as you guys are able to on your end over there. Fran, what's your thought?
Yeah. Well, I mean, with arena football in general, or just the...
Well, just in terms of how it, what, as we kind of wrap up the section on the Arena League, where do you guys predict this league, let's say in 3 weeks?
Well, maybe survival of the fittest, maybe 8 to 10 teams. Maybe someone takes over control for Lee Hutton, because this guy, he's not doing a good job. Maybe Nashville, one of these other markets, takes over. Maybe a guy like Jeff Fisher should run the Arena Football League. At least he knows football and has passion for it. I mean, the markets that care the most should be calling the shots, not a commissioner that doesn't.
That was the NAL philosophy, and that collapsed. You need, I mean, at least my opinion, you need a strong central leadership, because once everybody starts going rogue, once everybody starts doing what they want to do.
Kind of like the old USFL back in the 80s.
Exactly. But like I said, hopefully 10 teams make it. Hopefully 14, 15, 16. Mm-hmm. As Fran said, I think a month from now would be definitely a clearer picture of what will be going on and what will be happening. And I think that will definitely it'll seem like 6 months to make it to that 1 month. Okay. To be honest with you, that's what it's gonna feel like.
I feel like I need popcorn every time I go on those boards. The fans are having a field day with this. The fans just love it's. Look at this, it's failing. I told you so. Ha ha! Like that Nelson guy from Simpsons. Ha ha! The AFL is folding again. I mean, the reason why I get involved with this nonsense is because it's just so sketchy. It doesn't seem legit. But if I don't have a team close by, I'm not even going to Greensboro for a National Arena League game. The team invited me to go over there, but I'm not gas prices. I'm not driving like 100 miles. No.
Well, you know, to wrap up our whole arena, our indoor football league segment here. I'm going to concur because Max Camera Guy, he made a couple more comments here, yeah. And I agree with him. He goes, they needed another year to organize and get money security. I have no disagreements with that. I think he's absolutely right. His prediction here is the AFL will have an arena bowl, but the failure, he predicts that they're going to have an arena bowl. So I'll be curious to see. You know, where we're at. And the Arena Bowl is scheduled for when, guys? You know?
In July, I think, in Minnesota. I don't know. We'll see what happens. The thing is, I'll be honest with you, the league dropped the ball week one. You had a fantastic Albany-Orlando game that could have been on the NFL Network. It would have got a higher rating. If they were organized, they had their act together, they would have made been focusing on that instead of the Philadelphia Soul debacle. Because everyone said that it was a fun, crisp, exciting, old. I mean, they could have. That's where they dropped the ball.
Yeah. So, hey, buddy. Hey, Max Camera Guy. Thank you for watching too. As we're going along, I just figured out how to show people's comments here too. So that's pretty awesome.
I see that. I saw that Max went to Arena Bowl 3. So that's awesome. I still wish.
30, no, he said 31.
Oh, 30. I wish I had my Arena Bowl 5 t-shirt from Tampa Bay Storm. I had that shirt as a kid. It was amazing. And my mom threw it out, and I'm not bitter.
Jay Gruden.
Yeah. So, well, okay, guys, well, let's switch gears here. Let's talk about the United Football League. And for openers here, I just want to straight up get it out of the back here. For all of my memes and all of my hot takes this past spring, I'm going to eat crow on them. I got no problems eating crow. You know, it looks like the UFL is not, it might be here another year, guys. Fran, I'm going to let you lead off with this because you are writing your article. You're writing your articles. You're writing your articles for rsportscentral.com and you have a UFL report each week. So I'm gonna let you lead off here. Where are we at week 5? You just kind of give a general overview for those who aren't watching the UFL and where the league's at in terms of who's leading, who are the good teams, who are the bad teams, how is attendance, how are the ratings?
Well, the unfortunate thing is, you think with 8 teams to be more parity. Unfortunately, there's a couple of good teams. You have in the XFL conference, you have St. Louis and San Antonio tied at 4-1. The defenders are 2-3 because they don't have a running game. And then at the bottom, they're all in the running game. They're 0-5. Doesn't shock me because they were 4-6 last year and they got hot and won the championship. But then you have in the South where it's like with Birmingham running away with it. They're perfectly undefeated team. Then you have Michigan Panthers, which are an ugly team. They run the ball, play good defense. But then you have Memphis and Houston at 1-4. So you would think I'm surprised that so many teams are struggling. That's my take on the first half. What do you think, David?
Looking at the roster, you can definitely tell who's had consistency in coaching and who is making changes every year or every whatever time period that is, because the teams with the best record have had the same coaches since day one. I mean, they haven't changed philosophy. There's only so many UFL quarterbacks available, and the ones who are 4-1 have picked the quarterbacks who fit their systems. It sounds like an easy analysis, but if you look, you watch Birmingham play, there's a crispness to it. They know what they're looking to do on every offensive series. Same thing with St. Louis. Then you have, as you brought up with Michigan with no running game, they don't look lost necessarily, but there's no comfort there. You can't, it seems like besides having a good quarterback, because they're all good quarterbacks, because to be able to play professional football, you have to be a good quarterback. Yeah. But you need the right combination of offensive line. You need the right combination there to make that all click. And it seems like from year one to year two to year three, it doesn't seem like there's much in the actual way of changing of play that's going to really diversify or change a team. It seems like you know what you're going to get, and you got to stop it. The trick play, like I said, I thought I'd see, at least for this year, I thought I'd see a lot more different styles of play. It seems like everyone's got the same base and then run off of that base. So that's just myself. It feels like they're all going to a hub, practicing together, and then who is making the better plays? Who's got better execution each week?
Well, Dave, do you think Adrian Martinez would be a good quarterback in the CFL, or does he not have the accuracy to make it in that league?
I would question, and Greg, I want to hear Greg's thoughts too. I don't think he has the arm strength to make the throws that are necessary in the difference in the CFL game than the NFL game. The field's wider. You need to have it's just a different quarterbacking. And I'm not sure. Maybe I was too hasty in saying his arm strength. I don't know. I think he's played too long in the NFL to be able to make a transition in an easy way that would not frustrate him.
Plus, he gets hurt all the time, too.
Yeah, you're going to take a lot of shots in the CFL. That's just...
Yeah. The CFL game is completely different. I know Oz Davis over at the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast, him and I have talked about this on his show. Him and I have talked about it personally. But to me, when it comes to the CFL to me is like another sport. It's like your difference between Australian rules football and, say, Irish Gaelic football. Concept's the same, but you need skill sets are different. And I always say Kyler Murray, piss poor NFL quarterback, but he would be great in the CFL because he's a dual threat. And that's just kind of my take on, because again, I haven't watched any of the UFL games, so it's hard for me to, that's why I'm leaving it to you guys being the experts on this one. Cause I haven't been able to watch really any UFL games without having to jump through hoops, VPN, trying to find the game, so on and so forth. And plus I'm cut out with half the games because I don't have access to Fox. So on that, kick it back to you.
What do you think? What do you think, Fran? Who's, is there anybody have a chance to make a run here, or are the playoffs pretty much set in your eyes?
Well, if DC loses to San Antonio this week, they're done. Because San Antonio will be 5-1, and they get the tiebreaker with winning them head to head. So the problem is, by end of the season, these teams may lock up playoff spots, and the games might be completely meaningless. So the league wants St. Louis in the UFL championship. If that happens, they may have over 60,000 people there in that dome. That's what they want. And the thing is, they might get it. The thing is, San Antonio doesn't surprise me because Wade Phillips is a better coach than Hines Ward. San Antonio did not. I thought San Antonio would be good. Everyone had them low on their on their preseason. Why? Wade Phillips is a good coach and they have a good offense. And Quentin Dormey should have been the starting quarterback all along. I think he's better than Chase Garbers, who's out for the season with a broken wrist. So
hey, I'm rooting for Wade Phillips to make it to the championship because, I mean, I know Dave and I, Fran might have been a little bit ahead of your time, but I know Dave and I were big Bum Phillips fans back when we were kids. So
prior to Sean McDermott being coach, Wade Phillips was the last coach to take the Bills to the playoffs.
Oh, really? That's reaching way back in the history bag right there. I didn't realize that.
The Music City. I'm not saying the rest.
Well, okay. I won't say either. But Frank Wycheck. Okay, not enough said. But like I said, I mean, the UFL, I'm not enjoying it as much as the XFL, but it's more of like I do my players of the week. I do my inside UFL column. I just dissect it and come up with themes and columns. Enough where I just pick up – I'm using my football fandom to write it. I'm glad it's not 2 weeks. I was getting burned out covering both of these leagues. So I'm probably going to the D.C. Arlington game in first week of June. That'll be a fun go to D.C. for experience just to do that. But it's been all right. I mean, it's just like I said, when the weather gets nicer, I'm going to be outside. So I'm not going to be home watching these UFL games if I have like other things to do.
Fran, two questions for you.
Yep.
The season ended today. Who's your MVP?
I would go AJ McCarron.
And then my second question that's eluding me now is, oh yeah, here it is. What is making you like this less than the XFL? What has changed in your eyes with replacing one letter in the name that's taken away your excitement for it?
Well, the XFL is very personal to me because I covered all three versions of it. I covered 2001, I covered it in 2020, I covered it in 2023, and the XFL is why I'm living in Raleigh right now, because it's kind of like where I connected with a friend who followed my work, and then when United Football League formed, he created fans like UFL Access, remember who I was. Plus, when I was down in San Antonio, I was loving every moment of that. I did the media day, I was running around doing my thing. I did a tour of the Alamo. I got showered in confetti at the Alamo Dome. I just don't feel as invested because it's just I'm not doing – I mean, last year I was doing power rankings. I just don't feel – I'm not as invested in this. And also, I've been covering so many other sports leagues. I'm having fun covering lacrosse, hockey, soccer. I used to be just more focused on football, but now I feel like I can cover any sports league and collaborate.
Well, let me ask you, with the UFL this year, where does it compare to last year? Let's say we'll use the XFL because the majority of the teams in the UFL are XFL teams. Has a comparison been done between now and then in terms of fan excitement? I mean, obviously we have the ratings and everything, but do you guys sense less fan excitement this year compared to last year? I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, when I was floating around on social media, I know at the very beginning of the league, I was kind of tuned into it just a little bit. I did see some panic buttons being hit by some staunch XFL people, including our friend Los Mysterio. He hit the panic button and was trying to rally the troops and get people to go to the games and everything. What's the excitement level this year, say, compared to last? Is it as much hype compared to last year? I mean, what do you guys think?
Go ahead, dude.
Well, I would say for me, I would say the hype is less. Only because, and I would say hype being you have one group on one side, one group on the other, and then you had the war of words in the middle. I don't feel as though this brought everybody together in a kumbaya football moment, but I think the realization that this is a business, this is where we are now, and we need to move forward. And it seems like it's a pretty united front at the top of the league itself and how it's being presented. The games are on, there's write-ups. So I don't think there's There's no the hype that was brought by the two factions of groups saying, where I'm better and you're better. Since that's not there, there's to me, that's where the hype is gone. And now the football is speaking for itself.
Which it should be the on-field product.
Well, obviously, the most exploring issue is the attendance figures. Everyone's going crazy about the attendance. But the thing is, Paul Reitz made a great comment on another podcast saying that USFL undervalued their product. They had such cheap tickets and that gave them like $10 tickets, or all they cared about was TV, to look good on TV. But they undervalue it, and some of these fans of markets, they're charging more, and now they don't want to pay that amount. They undervalue their product. Making it very cheap to go to these games. That's what the USFL screwed up.
Where is the attendance? Is it?
Well, in Michigan and then in Birmingham and then in Detroit where you had $10 tickets. Well, how can you afford to make money if you only charge $10 tickets? I mean, you gotta have more expensive tickets to get, in the market value.
But is the attendance up or down? I mean, outside St. Louis, obviously.
St. Louis, DC are pretty up and solid. Arlington's similar. San Antonio's a little bit better, but Michigan struggled. Memphis struggled. Birmingham's not doing as good. I mean, they have a great team, and they still don't pack the place.
I will stick with the USFL model wasn't to sell tickets. That wasn't their forefront. So were mistakes made? Not in their eyes, because that wasn't what their number one business plan was. Their plan was to get it on television, because they would get 10 times the amount of money than what ticket sales would do for them.
Well, and that's why ratings dropped in the USFL from last season. So you need more than just TV ratings.
I agree, but it's not my money. It's not my money. Hopefully St. Louis. I mean, let's be honest. If St. Louis isn't in there, they're still going to sell 50,000 tickets.
Yeah, they will. They want to stick it to the NFL. They definitely.
But they stick it to the NFL. The NFL is going. The NFL left and gave them almost $1 billion. Who do you think's laughing?
Yeah, true.
Let's be honest. The NFL does not care.
No.
Nope.
No.
Kroenke wrote a check for $978 million to the city of St. Louis and left. And you know how quickly he made that $978 million back? Within a year.
In another week, I want to see fans in Birmingham show up when they play St. Louis. That could be a preview of the UFL championship. I want to see a decent TV rating. Let's see what happens. That game should be huge, especially if both these teams win this week. We'll see if people actually tune in to watch a good game, and people in Birmingham are actually going to support the product.
Well, I mean, that gets to my next question, Dave. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. When it comes to the TV ratings. Are the TV ratings up, down? Are they remaining steady? Where is the TV product at compared to even say from week one to now?
Dave? It's been steady. It hasn't dipped that much. I mean, because it's more over the network games. There's not as many cable games, and there's no FS1 or USA, and there's no FX. So.
Right.
Yep, and that's where they're going to make their money, by being on these network games every single week. I gauge it by watching to see and write down who the advertisers are. If there is a new advertiser, that's a new check. If there is something going that's how I gauge all these games on television, is they're getting not necessarily prime time, but 7 o'clock. I guess you can call that rolling into prime time, but. They're also doing primetime football Sunday afternoons, Saturday night. Like they're doing what I think is the correct way to build and grow this.
Yeah.
They got rid of those useless Thursday night games.
Much like Dave, you and I talked about the same thing last year. We were talking about, okay, how do you improve? How do you get people to tune in and what they're doing? clearly they listened to our podcast back, you know, listened to our advice last year by doing what they're doing now. But with that said, I mean, obviously we know that the league is going to make it through the end of the year and they're building the foundation for following years. Do you see, I mean, hopefully with, well, if the game's in St. Louis, the championship game's in St. Louis and the Battlehawks are in the championship game, it's going to be, I got a feeling that the UFL championship game is going to be about, is going to be as like an event as the first USFL championship back in 83 at Mile High Stadium. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my, I'm hoping I'm right. Do you think I might be on to think that might be a correct analogy when it comes to where the UFL is headed, at least in the short term? Dave or even Fran, you guys, what do you guys think? Fran, what do you think?
Well, I think, well, if St. Louis gets in the championship, it's going to be like the biggest party ever for St. Louis. It could be, I mean, it could be more important to them than the NFL championship, Super Bowl they won. Well, it could be that important to them. But the thing is, it's long and steady wins the race. I mean, the thing is, people may think they're going to make knee-jerk decisions, but they need to a year of marketing, selling tickets. They need to, it was a rush job. They put the schedule out so late. I mean, thanks to that, we had two regional games. It was more of like a getting everything organized, getting things taken care of, and it took forever to get things straightened out. And it seemed like they had to be too even Steven. I mean, I think the Houston Roughnecks fans got a raw deal. They should have kept been able to keep Wade Phillips. I mean, if you had five XFL teams, and so be it. But I mean, why should they get the short end of the stick of the Gamblers franchise? They never even played a game in that market.
Did Wade Phillips want to coach in Houston this year?
Good point. That's a good point. We don't know.
And that's the thing. Is like I'm not trying to be a wise guy. I'm just curious. I mean, if I was Wade Phillips, just the legacy of his father coaching in Houston, I would want to do it. But that's a whole. That you're looking at 50 years ago of comparisons, but I just don't know. I mean, he might not have wanted to, but like I said, I think one of the questions like Max brought up in the chat there on YouTube, interesting thing about the starting of the season and how the XFL and the USFL differed, and if that's something that they should look at in going forward.
They should start after the Super Bowl. I mean,
that's what he brought up. And I'm curious about that because of, I understand putting this whole merger together and getting everything, all their ducks in the row to go forward. I'm curious if that's a direction that they're going to look to do in the future, is to start earlier, especially when a year Fox has a Super Bowl, or you know what I mean? I'm just curious on how that plays out, if that's something that they're looking to do now that the NFL, not trying to segue away, now that the NFL wants to hold the Super Bowl like President's Day
weekend is what they're shooting for, which makes sense.
The crazy part is everything that Goodell said actually made sense. And that, I think that's what's scaring a lot of people. It's like, oh, hold on a second. A commissioner of the league saying something we all agree on?
Yeah. Well, we'll segue out a little bit here with talking about the UFL. But, yeah, I mean, that would make complete sense with the NFL because that's what the fans have wanted.
Yes.
Players don't want the 18 games, but they already kind of have 18 games. I mean, it's – correct me if I'm wrong. He wasn't talking about adding any preseason games, was he?
No. Two preseason games, 18. Basically the CFL season.
Okay. So
not the extra bye week. You play 18 games.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is with the 18 game schedule and the NFL has had issues.
Injuries.
But with that said, other leagues have done the same thing, and that 18 games doesn't mean you have to play 18 games. because at some point you're going to need a rest in there. I mean, let's face it, you're going to have games where you can send in the second team and play. You rotate players out. So I've never quite understood. I've understood the players' complaints with the 18-game schedule, but at the same time, I just can't see a coach burning out all his horses for 16 weeks and then expecting that, you know, it's load management is the term that we use. I would suspect with an 18-game schedule that coaches are going to learn how to load manage their guys better. I mean, you look at any good running back, you can't run, you can't run your running back 18 games in a row. I mean, that's just impossible. Not that really anybody uses a running back, but like going back to, but yeah, it's like, I was listening, you know, right? Like, it all makes sense. Yeah. I mean, there was nothing there that anybody could disagree with. And again, the fans have wanted the Super Bowl on a Saturday, but if you move it another week to President's Day weekend, because they don't care about the UFL. So they're like, whatever, you guys are going to have to make your adjustments. Mm-hmm. But if they have a 3-day weekend, it gives the fans exactly, plus it gives the fans more football, which really is kind of what we're all looking for anyway.
Oh, and the thing is, I'd be curious at the end of the day, if the players actually are against an 18-game schedule, because all that stuff is basically negotiated as part of a CBA.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get paid 18 games, that means salaries are going to go up. That means the pool of money for the players will need to go up. So they're all going to win. And then at the end of the day, you're going to have these games played when people want to. They're going to get paid more. Now there's only two preseason games, so it's not like the players are playing in the preseason games anyways. So as a season ticket holder, I'm getting three preseason games, but it's part of my wholly ridiculous cost, and I got these extra preseason games that are billed in the exact same price. It's not like you get your nine or your eight or nine games, and then, it's only $10 or $15 for the preseason games. Oh, no, they are full price. So, I don't know, it just seems to make sense, and they'll negotiate something. The players will get something for it, and that's how it always ends up working out.
Yeah. So, hey, Fran, I'm going to let you have the final word with everything UFL and obviously minor league sports. So let's take a few minutes. Go ahead, Fran.
Well, how about one more thing? We should touch base on CFL draft. That's CFL draft.
That's right.
Want
that's
his stickers. I mean, my Jets drafted him. Is he going to make in the NFL? The cornerback with the he played in the Fan Control Football League, and then he played in the Oregon. That's had 5 interceptions. Is he going to make it in the NFL? Quantes Stiggers. You guys follow the Oregon more than I do.
I think he's a really good shot. He's got the right size. He kind of fell through the holes of not getting drafted because he didn't play in college. But that's a whole different issue. But Greg, please correct me. I think he has a legit shot of making the Jets. Maybe special teams this first year, but I can see him getting some like nickel and dime package and getting some play, but I think he could stick.
Yeah, and if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy for more than, I don't know, 3 minutes, it's just another weapon that, you know, the Jets, you know, it's just another weapon tool in the arsenal. So I would say he's got a shot. And I feel your pain being a Jets fan too with drafts. Cause I was just, before the NFL draft in Chicago, when the NFL draft came to Chicago, I'm kind of segueing here, going on a little tangent, but I'll explain what I mean. When the NFL draft was in Chicago, one of the sportscasters that I always watch is from New Jersey and grew up a Jets fan. So he did the whole, you know, made fun of Jets fans in terms of just their reaction to the draft. Every draft, the Jets fans are always the most entertaining because, I'm a Cardinals fan, so I have no expectations for my team when it comes to drafting other than it's going to go poorly. But in New York, there's always hope. So Fran, with the draft this year, with the Jets, how do you think they did?
I like the Florida State quarterback they got in the fifth round because if he wasn't hurt, he would have been a higher draft. I like the Jets draft. I'm glad they won one offensive lineman from Penn State to protect Aaron Rodgers, and then they got and then they got a wide receiver in the third round, another weapon for him to throw around. But the Jets, I mean, I like the draft they did. I like the picks they made. They wheeled and dealed a little bit. They wheeled and dealed with the Vikings, got a couple more picks. So I mean, the Jets, you know, Mel Kiper gave him a B. I'll agree with that.
And Dave, how'd your Bills do?
I thought they did exactly what they needed to. They needed to replace stars who they lost, some who are aging out, and they built depth. They built depth through the draft. So I think at the end of the day, I think the receiver from Florida State is Keon Coleman. I think if you haven't seen what he posted, if you haven't seen his interview when he got introduced to the Bills, it is worth a watch because it was a chuckle. It was hilarious. But I think I think overall the Bills did a very good job. They got a lot of players who can fill out their roster, and they have a lot of money. They're one of the teams that invested heavily in their quarterback. So this is the first year of Josh Allen's big part of his contract. So now you're kind of stuck with, you don't have another 10, 15 players making a lot of money. You have a few players, and then you need to fill in with depth and quality and,
right,
and get extra. So,
well, having a great quarterback is like having an F-35, but yet you don't have any good weapons attached to it. Without the weapons, without the receivers, without the running backs coming out of the hell, without the offensive line, you know, you're screwed. So, you know, with that said, my Cardinals got Marvin Harrison Jr., which is great. Hopefully he becomes the next Larry Fitzgerald. But until the rest of the team improves, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, we'll see. We'll see what happens with the Cardinals. I'm really not that hopeful this year. But, you know, on the flip side is, hey, I'm also a Bears fan, and the Bears have Caleb Williams. Though I still say, I posted a meme there, and you guys probably saw it on my personal Facebook page, that, you know, he is the next Mitch Trubisky, because Bears fans have been down this road with high-quality draft picks who are at quarterback, haven't panned out. So the last one that really panned out was Jim McMahon, and that was for but a fleeting moment.
I do like the receiver. Was it Roman? You guys picked up in the first round. I like him. I can honestly say that the Bears could not have played that any better than they did. I really do. I thought they had one of the of all the teams. I thought they were one of the best first rounds of anybody.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have many picks after that, if I remember correctly. But it's funny. Let's see. Let me post this
here. Packers.
Yeah, which is true. Hell, even Mongo ended up with the Packers. So, but just real quickly on the Bears have got, they've got a lot of issues going into this season because it may or may not be their coach. If the team does poorly starting out of the gate, and if they have a losing season, their coach is gone. They've got stadium issues, which I don't know how close you guys are following, but city's not going to. The city wants the new stadium, but there's just so much public money involved. I don't see it happening. Now, the Bears, the amount of money they're putting up front, they could pretty much build their own stadium. They're already talking about putting in billions of dollars of their own money. But, you know, this has been the stadium issue in Chicago has been one that's been around since I was a little kid, because they've played in the same stadium, Soldier Field, even after it was rebuilt for what, going over 50 years. And prior to that, they were playing Wrigley Field. So the Bears have a lot of issues both on and off the field. So Fran, let's talk about our Sports Central and your coverage there. I mean, we've talked football today, but what else is going on real quickly in the minor leagues? Anything of note, people, you know, we lost him. Oh, his iPhone heated up. That's what he said. So, hey Fran, no worries. No worries there. This was Fran's first live stream with us, and unfortunately had some technical issues with the webcam, so he was using his phone. And the phone iPhone heated up, which I definitely can understand. Dave, I know, I'm sure you can too. So, hey, real quickly before we wrap everything up here, let's talk about future shows here. We've got the CFL season starting here, got in about a month. So, in the next couple weeks, I'm very hopeful to have some of our CFL podcast friends, particularly the guys from the Third Down Gamble podcast, to come on. Last year, I did a show with them to kind of review the season, to actually preview the season and see where and see what's coming up with Don. And hopefully we'll maybe not only the Third Down Gamble guys, but also hopefully bring in some of the other podcasters from some of the other teams, including Superfan Mike over at the Turf District podcast, and hopefully maybe somebody, you know, people over on the East Coast, on the eastern side of Japan, eastern side of Canada, my apologies, to talk some CFL.
It just seems like the CFL podcasts are heavily on the western side of the western provinces for some reason.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's been a while since I've kind of delved into CFL podcast land for a lot of reasons. It's just, you know, it's weird because being retired now, I'm more busy. Because back when the pandemic hit, obviously there was a lot, all of us had a lot of downtime. We were at home. So I dove into all the CFL podcasts that were out there as I was writing. But now that I'm finding I'm retired and life's been kind of busier. I mean, it's really weird to say it. Sometimes I feel like I'm more busy now. I don't have as much time to listen to podcasts as I did, say, when I was working at the office and I could literally tune the world out, write my reports, mm-hmm. and listen to the podcast. It's weird. So I need to get back and dive into all the shows for my friends. You know, again, the guys and girls over at the Turf District podcast. You've got Third Down Gamble. You got the Argos Fancast. You've got Rouge, White, and Blue with Oz and Joe Pritchard.
That should be starting up again pretty soon, right?
I hope so. I need to reach out to Oz because Oz is on the other side of the world, much like I am at the present moment. So, but him and Joe Pritchard do a great show. In fact, it's the oldest continuously running CFL podcast in the States. And if you're going to listen to an American CFL podcast, an American podcast about the CFL, they are the premier CFL podcast in America. I don't care what other Johnny Come Latelys have said over there in Seattle. Now Joe and Oz are the real deal. They know their stuff, and because they've been watching the game. And Joe Pritchard, God, I mean, he's a hardcore Blue Bombers fan. So
unfortunately. And,
No, they're all great guys, and it's
they are
great.
They are.
The great thing about Twitter and social media is, I mean, these guys that I listen to with podcasts, much like you, we've all become friends, and none of us compete against each other. I mean, we're just like, you know, hey, listen to this podcast. Unfortunately, you don't when other podcasts in America that are trying to focus on the CFL, they don't really play. I don't even want to say it. They're not team players when it comes to, you know, hey, go listen to those guys. Listen to those guys. We may not know everything, but listen to those guys.
And I love the different perspectives. It's yeah. where you are. It's like where right. Joe is and his perspective or the guys out there. It's great to see the different through their spectrum of what the CFL is doing or what they're seeing and what they're hearing. Cause it's yeah. great because being where I am in Western New York, I get what I find or I listen to. And it's good to hear. Like, I'm yeah. looking forward to hearing from the Turf District, like, what's the latest with Edmonton new ownership? Like, from what I've seen and what I've heard is by mid-season it should be done. That's yeah. tremendous. But they're living it day to day, so they're going to have a better understanding of what exactly is going on. Like, I saw on TSN that over 20 different groups had interest in buying the Edmonton Eskimos.
Yeah.
That's outstanding. Like, that is great for the league. For the league. I hope somewhere along the lines that information gets out going 20 different groups were interested in buying this team.
That says a lot to what people, I mean, the CFL, I think the market value on the CFL is going up because people see, you know, but the problem with the CFL is we kind of been here before, you know, with its fortunes going up and down. So we are on an upswing with ownership, not only with, and, you know, looking, things are looking positive in Edmonton, but you got, obviously things are looking great in BC. Things are looking good in Montreal. Even things are kind of looking good in Montreal. In Toronto, but they just need to get more asses in the seats because they
which is good to see. They did overall. So that's good to see.
Right. But I'm talking, I mean, to me, I'm just thinking you pack that place because first off, Toronto is never going to get an NFL team. But hey, support the team you have because there was a time when the Toronto Argonauts did better than NFL teams when it comes to attendance, when it came to excitement, when it came to fan interest. So hopefully that the magic in Toronto, again, that's where we always talk about. They need to bring in the younger fans and everything. So hopefully, you know, hopefully we'll see a trend where you get more younger fans and more fan excitement. And, you know, people, I mean, I've read on social media, people talk, oh, expansion, like the whole St. Louis joining the CFL thing. Oh, that ain't going to happen. CFL's the best bet for CFL expansion is staying in Canada. Don't come to the States, grow the game at home because that is the most important thing when it comes to CFL football. You got to grow that game at home. Otherwise, why expand for expansion money? No, that we've been down this road before.
And I'm curious to see, I think with the draft this year, it seemed like there was an opportunity. And it is funny. I was watching a couple different CFL draft shows and just going through, just getting familiar with players and listening. But it sounds like with this draft this year, this was the year that got everybody caught up from COVID, where players got extra years. So there was talk of this crop of draftees could be one of the best in many, many years. So I'm curious.
I didn't even think about that. You know, that's a great point. I didn't even think about that.
I'm curious if it gives a shot in there. I'm like, the number one draft pick is 26 years old. He started in the USFL last year. He was never drafted. Turns out I think one of his family members, I think it was his father, who's Canadian. So now it's like, hey, he's Canadian.
Yeah. He
doesn't. And he's actually, his family's from like the Edmonton area. So like it could not have fallen any better. He was in some NFL training camps, was never drafted, played, started in the USFL last year. And it was like, he might actually be starting by midseason, which, when's the last time a CFL draft pick went in and started?
Nathan Moore. I mean, not Nathan Rourke did Nathan Rourke start immediately after? Or no, he had to sit a year on the bench.
I don't think he started immediately, but walk in and start like that.
Yeah. So he's the great Canadian hope. I mean, much like Nathan Rourke was.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where the CFL is growing, but you're still fighting that where Nathan Rourke's getting paid more not to play.
Yeah.
Play.
Yeah. But with that said, I mean, the CFL has been around same amount of time as the NFL. It's always going to be there. And if you're going to play at the highest, it's still the highest level of football. And it's still, I still consider it on par with the NFL in terms of pro with, you know, top division, whereas UFL, second, you know, I mean, we can go, that's a whole other subject.
Yeah.
But so with all that said, hey, we are, for everybody who's been watching, we've had a lot of people watching here. More people have watched us continuously than ever before. So everybody who's watching, thank you very much. And if you're, you know, if you're reviewing shows, if you could please go to our, you know, Apple, Spotify, but if you could give us a review. A 5-star review would be really nice if you really think we're doing a great job. I know we've had a few jokers out there for whatever reason giving us 1 star. And one guy gave us a one star, and he's like, okay, well, that's your opinion. Fine. But no, if you can hit the like and subscribe button, all that stuff you hear from other podcasts, it is greatly appreciated. I know as we kind of march on here, you know, we're going to do a CFL preview show this month because we are now in May. We'll see what happens in June with the podcast. I'm going to be honest with you, Dave, because I think what we'll do, we may do, I'm going to be in America for a good month in June. So I don't know, comms wise and life wise, if I'm going to be in a position to do podcasts, but either way, we're going to cover the CFL season though. The first week, the first month in June, may, you know, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, I've got it's going to be my first real trip back to the mainland in over a year and a half. And, got a lot of people to see, got a lot of people to catch up with while I'm there. So, but I definitely will be following the CFL games during the weekend. And Dave, before we wrap up everything, any final words?
Thanks, Max Camera Guy, for all your comments. Yes. Fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, here we go. He's a big stallion. Max is definitely a USFL. I'm not, CFL, UFL, CFL, USA kind of guy because, you know, he's much like me. He's a Baltimore Stallions fan at heart. So, and, so with all that said, hey, thank you very much for everybody for tuning in, and we will be seeing you here on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter, and we'll also, the podcast will be coming out here later tonight after the audio portion of it will drop while everybody there in North America is probably sleeping. So with all that said, hey, thank you very much for tuning in, and we will be seeing and talking to you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
This is Elroy Hirsch of the Los Angeles Rams presenting the Rams Song.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Hello, football friends. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and I'd like to invite you to the portal of positive football history, Pigskin Dispatch and PigskinDispatch.com. We talk about everything that centers around the game of American football, expert discussions, the origins of the games, the great players, teams, and coaches, and more, as some great guests and insights from experts. We have new episodes 3 to 4 times a week, and you can find us on SportsHistoryNetwork.com, PigskinDispatch.com, or your favorite podcast provider.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, To learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.